Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Michael Begg. I'm counsel for Appellant Jay Zambrana in this case, and with me at counsel table today is Lars Peterson, an associate that ably assisted in the preparation of the reply brief in this appeal. But Your Honors, I'll be brief and to the point. As you know from reviewing our briefs, after trial, Mr. Zambrana, who had been convicted of murder and a number of drug conspiracy counts, discovered that Denny Areola, who was one of the government's three key witnesses to testify against him regarding the murders, received and used illegal drugs, was permitted to have sexual liaisons with female visitors on prison grounds, and had unfettered and unmonitored access to both land-based and cellular telephones while he was in federal custody in the months leading up to Mr. Zambrana's trial. At the evidentiary hearing on Mr. Zambrana's motion for a new trial, the government took the position that the legal drugs, sex, and phone privileges were simply the quote-unquote benefits that Mr. Areola had earned as a prison trustee. The prosecution also denied having any knowledge of Mr. Areola's activities while in federal custody. Areola also denied that these activities were the result of any kind of quid pro quo between him and the prosecution with respect to his testimony. The district court accepted this and ruled simply that Areola's activities were just the result of lax attention by the state jail employees, and that there was insufficient evidence to find that Mr. Zambrana had fallen victim to a Brady violation or that any of the newly discovered evidence would have made a difference in the outcome at trial. Mr. Zambrana submits in this appeal that it simply cannot be the case that no one in the government's investigative team, which, mind you, included the FBI, the DEA, the IRS, and the prosecutors themselves, had any knowledge of these goings-on. Now, the U.S. Marshals were certainly able to discover Mr. Areola's activities. Indeed, FBI agent Michael Prendergast, who testified at the evidentiary hearing, acknowledged that the Marshals made him aware of these activities at least 1 year before Mr. Zambrana's counsel was given the information. Under Supreme Court case law and the case law of this circuit, Your Honors, if the Marshals knew that Mr. Areola's activities had occurred prior to or during the trial, that knowledge can be imputed to the prosecution for purposes of Mr. Zambrana's Brady claim. And Mr. Zambrana submits that it was simply error for the prosecution to find that there was no knowledge of Areola's activities on the part of the prosecution.
Even all the ugly things that were brought out in cross-examination about Areola, including his involvement in a murder, what would this have added?
Well, Your Honor, there's no doubt that Mr. Areola, as well as the other defendants or the other witnesses, Clinton and Rapol, were impeached at trial. Their prior bad acts were brought forth. The jury knew that all of these witnesses had accepted plea bargains in exchange for their testimony. And the government asserts that the additional evidence would have been simply more impeachment evidence and cumulative of that impeachment evidence. And we respectfully disagree with that. In Mr. Zambrana's view, the newly discovered evidence, although it would have been impeaching and it would have further served to undermine the credibility of these witnesses, was of an order of magnitude.
No, I don't think so, because compare two inducements that are given to a witness. One is to give him a lighter sentence. The other is to give him a cell phone, right? So, well, clearly the lighter sentence, that's the real inducement for cooperating with the government. Areola, given his record, wouldn't he have been exposed to very substantial punishment if he didn't play ball?
Undoubtedly.
So how much of a break was he given? Was that apparent at trial?
It's not apparent from the record. I know that there was immunity from prosecution as to the murder-related counts.
In the cross-examination of him?
I believe that the particulars of the plea bargains were brought out at trial. The fact that there was, in fact, a plea bargain was. But it's our view, Your Honor.
And there was no reference to the potential punishment, like he'll be sentenced afterwards or what his sentence was? You're saying that didn't come out?
No, Your Honor.
Now, on this, on the murder, though, the Rapol testified about the setup on the murders, right?
Correct.
So, Areola's testimony, even if the jury totally disregarded it, there was still that testimony.
That's correct, but it's our position, Your Honor, that the government's evidence at trial as to the murder was weak. They've said in their briefs that it was overwhelming. We take issue with that. And as we sit here today, no one knows whether or not Mr. Zambrano was convicted on these murder counts by a slim margin, or if it was the jury sat around and after one vote said he's guilty.
I'm curious, did your client present any evidence such as casino videotapes or eyewitness testimony as to the alibi that he was in the casino when the murders occurred?
No, Your Honor.
Did the district court, in terms of the hearing on whether or not Areola's testimony should come in, were there any limitations placed on him, Zambrana, in terms of what could be presented at that hearing?
By the court?
Yeah, by the court.
Not directly, Your Honor. The limitation that was placed on him was that he had 3.5 months to prepare for an evidentiary hearing in a case that he had tried 2 years earlier. But no, there was no rulings by the court that prevented that.
So then I'm curious about your saying that, you know, the hearing was insufficient before the district court. Wasn't there other evidence that could have been introduced at that hearing?
Perhaps, and it's our position that under the case law of this circuit, the court has a duty, its own duty, to fully inform itself before making any kind of a decision on a motion for a new trial, and that it simply didn't do that here.
Well, doesn't some of how the court gets informed is by counsel, by defense counsel, and putting some evidence so the court has something to be informed on?
Absolutely correct. And
so I'm just trying to figure out, was there anything you were prevented from doing before?
No, Your Honor. No rulings or anything directly from the court.
So getting back to the question of inducement, were you his trial? You weren't his trial lawyer.
No, Your Honor.
But Zambrana's trial lawyer, was he aware? He was aware that there was a plea bargain with Areola. Did he know the terms?
I believe he knew the terms, but I think that there was a ruling by the court that the specifics of the plea bargains were not to be aired before the jury.
Hmm.
But I believe that the counsel knew that.
What was the discussion with the marshals, with the investigative agents, about what happened? You know, this is a city lockup. It's not a jail, the Hammond.
But the section of the prison in which Mr. Areola was housed.
It's not a prison either. It's a city lockup.
Hammond County Jail, correct.
Not a county jail either. It's a city of Hammond lockup as opposed to the county jail.
Okay. It was referred to in the record as the Hammond County Jail. That's why.
Wrong.
Okay.
That's not what it is.
But this section of the prison in which Mr. Areola was housed was a federal custodial wing, pursuant to some kind of a contract with the federal government. So we would submit.
We have contracts with various facilities, including Hammond, which happens to be the closest lockup to where the courthouse is.
Correct. We would submit that, pursuant to that arrangement, Mr. Areola was in federal custody at the time leading up to the trial. I see that my time has expired. I'll reserve my remainder for rebuttal. And
thank you, Mr. Day.
Thank you.
Mr. Bradford?
Good morning, Your Honors. I would like to start out by addressing the issues that you raised with Mr. Baig, the issue of why the newly discovered evidence of Areola's misconduct was important, given that the jury already knew that he had a plea bargain with the prosecution. I submit that there's three reasons. The first is that the government at trial portrayed Areola as a reformed cooperating witness who was young and involved over his head in the double murders. But this newly discovered evidence would have destroyed that perception that Areola was this young cooperating witness, and because he received these benefits after he agreed to testify for the government. Second, as set forth in our brief, the newly discovered evidence removed the incentive for Areola to testify truthfully, that he no longer feared spending additional time in prison because he was receiving these extraordinary benefits, that of a free man. And third, he received a further reduction in his sentence because of the fact that he cooperated with the government in order to explain the benefits that he received. Thus, for all those reasons, the additional evidence would have been material to his credibility. Furthermore, James Irvin is entitled to a new trial here because the government is deprived him of a fair trial.
I understand your third point. If a witness is given additional benefits after the trial, does that justify a new trial or what?
Well, it was a benefit that the witness here received in exchange for his cooperating with the government. So it was a benefit that the jury didn't factor into its weighing of his testimony.
That's what bothers me about your argument. You're suggesting that if a witness gets some benefit that after the trial, say, that the jury wasn't aware of, you have to have a new trial.
I think it was in combination with the other reasons why his testimony was
incredible. Seems very different from the cell phones and the sex.
I would agree. I would say that the original benefits, the fact that he was receiving sex and drugs and pizza, and the government was throwing a birthday party for Areola while in prison, would be the big difference here. That the jury needed to know about that in order to provide Mr. Irvin with a fair trial. And by comparison to Zambrana, Areola was a critical witness to Irvin's appeal because of the fact that Irvin was convicted of only 11 counts, and of those 11 counts, only nine of them related to the double murder, which Areola was the only eyewitness. Now, because of that, I submit that this case is indistinguishable from this court's decision in Crivens, because in both cases, the government's actions created an atmosphere that prevented Irvin from receiving a fair trial. And here, it's the government's actions, this court should grant Irvin a new trial to curtail this government's actions that allowed pivotal government witnesses from receiving these outrageous benefits.
I understand there were only 2 days between when you learned about the new evidence and the sentencing hearing.
That right? is correct.
And was there a request for continuance made on the motion for new trial so you'd have more time to prepare?
There was no request for continuance. The government had the record shows that the government knew about the misconduct at a minimum in late 2004, but failed to disclose about it to trial counsel until late 2005.
So are you saying that there is nothing more you would have done if you had had more time, therefore there was no request for a continuance?
To the opposite. I believe if the government would have given us more time, that there would have been an ability to appreciate the seriousness of the evidence.
And the depth of this issue. And that's why I'm asking, why wasn't there a request for a continuance made when this was such startling news? I mean, you had no way of knowing whether the court would reject it or not when there was no request.
That is correct. I do not know why trial counsel did not request a continuance. I know that he immediately filed for a new trial motion upon receiving this information, and that the court proceeded with the hearing of the new trial motion upon learning of the new trial motion.
Well, in the government's brief, they say the investigation was completed in October of 2005, and the government on November 28th, 2005 disclosed the information.
That's right, but in Zambrana's evidentiary hearing, FBI agent Michael Pendergast testified that the FBI learned of this behavior in late 2004.
Well, you mean they learned from the marshals?
They learned from the marshals, and under this court's decision in U.S. v. Wilson, the knowledge of the custodian of a witness should be imputed to the prosecution for Brady purposes.
I understand that, but it's just if they don't know for sure, that's what happened. That's the point.
That's right, but at a minimum, they had the obligation to notify defense counsel that they were in the process of investigating this, that they know that the only eyewitness to the double murders received these outrageous benefits, and that they should be prepared to handle that evidence when their investigation is complete.
So you're saying you were entitled to notice that an investigation was started and ongoing?
That is correct. Beyond that, though, we were entitled to know what the government knew at the point that the FBI and the U.S. Marshals discovered that this misconduct continued. If the court has no further questions, I'm going to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Mr. Bella?
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Daniel Bella, arguing the case on behalf of the government. In the fall
of
19...
Would you describe the facility we're talking about, please?
The Hammond City Jail is a building which also houses the Hammond Police Department. It's a lockup The Hammond City Jail has a contract with the federal government.
How many inmates?
I don't know, Your Honor.
How many? Is it two-story, three-story?
It's
a small facility, in other words.
Yes, Your Honor. In the fall of 1998, Denny Ariola, Carlos Repo, and Jay Zambrano were working together in the drug trafficking business, but supplies of cocaine were tight. Ariola, Repo, and Zambrano hatched a plan to rip off two other drug dealers, Navarez and Hurtado, of 10 kilos of cocaine.
Okay, so we have the facts down. Let's get to this notice issue that counsel was arguing that, you know, this investigation was ongoing, that defense counsel wasn't told about it until the whole thing had been completed. Why wasn't that disclosed earlier?
The conduct in question at the Hammond City Jail occurred in 2003, according to the record. The government didn't learn about it until, I believe, early 2005. Counsel said late 2004, but it was long after the misconduct occurred at the Hammond City Jail. I would suggest to the court there's two reasons why defendants weren't notified about it immediately. And that is that an investigation had to take place. As with any criminal investigation, the government didn't want those who they were investigating to know that they were looking into it. Otherwise, there is a potential of destruction of evidence and all the hazards that occur if somebody you're looking at knows that the government's looking at them. That's one reason. Another reason is that the government needed to determine exactly what happened before it could make any kind of meaningful disclosure. If in early 2005 all the government knows is that there's some kind of goofy things going on at the Hammond City Jail, what are they going to tell the defense? There are some kind of goofy things going on at the Hammond City Jail. So what the government did was as soon as the government learned of misconduct at the Hammond City Jail, as soon as the FBI learned about it from the marshals, an investigation was launched. And as soon as that investigation was completed, when the government knew what had happened, the government made a full disclosure to the defense. And with the benefits of the investigation, the disclosure wasn't something goofy is happening at the Hammond City Jail. The disclosure was specifically what benefits Ariola received at the Hammond City Jail. And the government gave to the defense a letter that detailed each and every one of those benefits.
And so was there. And so there was no thought of providing the court with something in camera that these allegations had been made, that an investigation was pending, perhaps a trial should be postponed until we got some results in light of Ariola's critical role in the trial?
Oh, the trial had already been, I believe the trial had already
That's
been.
Right, the date, because remind me of the trial date.
Because
that's what I lost track of. Remind me of the trial date in relation to the allegation.
The jury convicted Irvin and Zambrana of all counts in November of 2003.
Okay, so this first came out again?
In late 2004 or
okay.
early 2005.
So then that was my confusion
right.
on the date. So, I understand.
It was well after the trial that this misconduct occurred. So the government, as soon as it learned of the misconduct, the government's sole purpose was to vigorously investigate the misconduct, determine what happened at the Hammond City Jail, and to press the FBI to proceed with that investigation quickly so as to notify the defendants in this case before the sentencing date occurred of exactly what happened.
And there was a delay in the sentencing date, too, right?
I think there were numerous delays in the sentencing date. Both defendants, following the trial, wanted a full transcript of the proceedings at trial. They filed various post-trial motions. Their post-trial motions based upon this misconduct were subsequent additional post-trial motions to others that they had filed.
But I guess apparently the government disclosed that information in November of 2005 and sentencing was held in March of 2006.
Irvin did not request an extension, as Judge Williams noted, of time for that sentencing hearing to occur. Zambrana did. And Zambrana requested an evidentiary hearing.
On December of 2005. That was when the first sentencing occurred, Esther Irvin.
I believe
Shortly
that's correct,
after
Your Honor. Yes, I believe that's correct, Your Honor. What Irvin did was Irvin, at sentencing, accepted the representations of the assistant U.S. attorneys that tried the case that they did not know of this misconduct at the time of the trial. and argued and accepted the government's disclosure of what had happened, but then argued based upon that to the court as to why a new trial should be granted.
So Irwin didn't ask at that time for a hearing?
Did not. No, Your Honor. Zambrana, on the other hand, did ask for a hearing. And the fact that Zambrana asked for and obtained a hearing, I think, shows the court what would have been disclosed or what would have happened had Irwin requested a hearing. Zambrana did. And Zambrana called witnesses to that hearing, and the court allowed Zambrana to call whatever witnesses they wanted, didn't curtail that. And so the court knows from the hearing that Zambrana conducted what could be developed. And I suggest that it was not helpful to the defendant's case. There's no question that what happened at the Hammond City Jail was misconduct. And the government, this wasn't benefits as for being a trustee, and it wasn't the government throwing a birthday party for these defendants. The government had as much of an interest in getting to the bottom of this, perhaps more than anyone else, because this kind of misconduct going on in a facility housing federal prisoners had the potential to undermine not only this conviction, but any other conviction that the government obtained where cooperating defendants were housed at the Hammond City Jail. So the government was very concerned about this misconduct and wanted to get to the bottom of it and stop it, of course. So it's not...
Marshall still have a contract with the Hammond City Jail?
They do have a contract. The procedures of the Hammond City Jail have tightened up considerably since this happened. The government's met with the chief of the Hammond Police Department repeatedly, and as I say, things have tightened up.
Was this the only case affected by this?
Yes, sir.
Lax procedures.
Yes, this is the only case where an issue arose at trial and has come up on appeal.
How critical was Areola's testimony to Irwin's case?
The evidence at trial was more than sufficient to sustain a conviction of Irwin and of Zambrana, exclusive of Areola's testimony. There was evidence at trial that included the history of Irwin's relationship with Zambrana, Irwin, a Gary police officer. That the evidence at trial showed had video from a poll camera throwing Irwin at Zambrana's Ultimate Motors car lot. It was testimony of the car lot employee that Zambrana ordered a purple Camaro be given to Irwin without the need for payment, so there's that history between them. There's Irwin's participation in previous rips, including the rip of the Callow brothers, who testified at trial, and whose testimony was supported, incredibly, by the testimony of Gary Police Internal Affairs Officer.
And you're referring to the rip-off of drugs and money.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, and this is independent of the homicide. This is another incident. So it shows the history of Irwin and Zambrana and this kind of activity between them. With regard to the homicides, there was Repo's testimony that Zambrana arranged for Irwin to rip off Furtado and Navarez and to kill them. There was Clinton's testimony that he helped Irwin load the bodies into the car, and that Irwin led Clinton to a remote alley behind Irwin's boyhood home where Irwin burned the car, and that Irwin used Clinton's cell phone on the return trip to call his girlfriend, and also that Irwin told Clinton on the return trip how Irwin and Benefides had killed Hurtado and Navarez. And Clinton's testimony about Irwin using Clinton's phone on the return trip to call his girlfriend was corroborated years later by cell phone records showing that call having been made. And Clinton had no reason to be calling Irwin's girlfriend, and for months before and after the homicides, there were no other similar calls from that phone to Irwin's girlfriend. Clinton's testimony was incredibly damaging to Irwin, actually helping Irwin load the bodies into the car, following Irwin to this remote location. This alley was a dead-end alley with limited access, hidden by a 20-foot embankment. Perfect place to do what to dispose of the bodies, and it was in the same block where Irwin's boyhood home was. And included, as I said, Irwin describing how he killed the bodies, how he killed these individuals. There was also Irwin was on duty at the time that this occurred, and there was a completely independent and unbiased witness who was in Irwin's patrol area who called the police complaining about a peeping Tom. Irwin was dispatched by police radio. Radio never arrived. poor servant was off doing other things, as we know now. So this additional evidence from the Hammond City Jail, it was cumulative evidence and cumulative impeachment evidence of Areola, because there was already testimony at trial that Areola and the other government witnesses, Clinton and Repo, had opportunities to discuss their testimony. There was other testimony at trial that Areola had a cell phone at MCC, in addition to being at Hammond City Jail, which resulted in an investigation there. But there was, so the evidence that the newly discovered evidence of what happened to Hammond City Jail was simply cumulative of what the jury already knew. And yet the jury...
Wouldn't the jury be permitted to know the details of the plea bargain?
I know of no reason why the jury wouldn't know the details of the plea bargain. Certainly that would be part of discovery, and and there's no reference in the briefs about the details of that.
Do you recall what came in on the plea bargain? That is, whether the sentence came in, their various sentences?
I don't think there were sentences at the time of trial.
But it came out the sentence was pending, it was going to come after the trial, or the fact that they weren't being charged, at least one of them?
I was not trial counsel, Your Honor, and I can't understand why there would not be any. Certainly there would be disclosure of the plea agreements, and I can't understand why there wouldn't be any ability to delve into the agreement that the defendants had with the government. I'd suggest to the court that this case is far different than other cases cited in the briefs of the parties. In the Williams case, for example, the contrast between the evidence presented at trial and the newly discovered evidence was striking in Williams, but was negligible here. In Williams, the witnesses testified at trial they had no opportunity to coordinate their testimony. The government emphasized that point at trial. And on the contrary, the excluded evidence showed the government witnesses had mingled with each other 16 hours of every day for a year. Here, it was repeatedly pointed out at trial that Repo and Clinton had contacts while incarcerated, as did Clinton and Areola. The new evidence simply showed more of the same, that Areola had a cell phone at the Hammond City Jail, as he had already admitted he had at MCC. And moreover, the extent of any contact between Areola and any other witnesses by virtue of that cell phone is speculative and limited, in that Clinton was incarcerated elsewhere and where he would not be able to receive incoming calls, and Repo was in the Witness Protection Program at the time. So what
Where was Clinton?
I'm not sure, Your Honor, but he was incarcerated elsewhere. I believe at the Lake County Jail. So the jury heard so much in the way of impeachment of Areola at trial, and this was similar.
Mr. Bradford's point that the government portrayed Areola as reformed, gone straight, good guy.
I don't know that was a theme at the trial. This conviction rested much more than just the testimony of Areola. That suggests it rested much more heavily on the testimony of Repo and Clinton, especially Clinton, where Irwin was concerned, than the testimony of Areola. So this was cumulative impeachment evidence, much the same as what the jury already knew. And there's no indication that the jury's verdict would be any different if they had learned of these shenanigans at the Hammond City Jail. There was no complicity by the government in it. The government didn't even know of it, so there was no Brady violation. When the government learned of it, the government investigated it promptly, made it known in detail to the defendants. The defendants had a full opportunity to obtain an evidentiary hearing in front of the district court, which Zambrana did. And the district court was in the best position, having seen the testimony at trial, the impeachment at trial, and having heard of the newly discovered evidence, the district court was in the best position to make a determination as to whether this would probably influence the jury's verdict, and the court determined it would not. And therefore, this court should affirm.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Bell.
Thank you.
So is there any rebuttal time? 1 minute? Would anybody like? Okay.
First, with all due respect to counsel, let me say that to describe the goings-on at the Hammond City Jail as merely goofy is a gross understatement. There was some discussion about a notice issue. I'd like
to
just raise...
Describe them that way. He said that before the investigation was complete, it would have been difficult to characterize them otherwise because they didn't know what had happened.
There was some colloquy with respect to evidence of discussion between Mr. Areola and one of the other witnesses, Mr. Clinton, at trial. We didn't get to the aspect of our argument relating to the collusion. However, it's important to note that although there was evidence of this one discussion, there was no evidence of the specific kinds of communications that were adduced at the evidentiary hearing brought forth at trial, in particular the testimony of Jesse Colon, who said that Mr. Areola told him that both that he, Clinton, and Repo were planning to, quote, get down and go to town on Mr. Zambrana. And there was another witness who testified at the evidentiary hearing, a man named Trinidad Cruz, who stated that Mr. Areola had counseled him to do just as Areola, Clinton, and Repo had done in Mr. Zambrana's case and pick a, quote, scapegoat to blame everything on. It's our position, Your Honors, that had this evidence been brought before the jury, it would have made a difference, and it would not merely have been cumulative of the other evidence of the one discussion between Mr. Areola and Mr. Clinton.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Begg. Your time has expired. So we thank Mr. Begg and Mr. Bradford for accepting the appointment and the vigorous efforts on behalf of their client.